This weekend starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Our wireless future. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour. It's possible that by 2025, artificial intelligence will be helping run your life 24/7. Tech analyst Rob Enderle is here with predictions. Also, on the personal finance front, the biggest risks we face today are not necessarily a recession or a stock market nosedive. We'll explain. Plus, what do Supreme Court justices tell each other in handwritten notes from the bench? A researcher has found out some of it's pretty funny. And the $5 billion bet that football can take hold in Los Angeles.
This isn't just a home for the Los Angeles Rams. This isn't just where the Chargers are going to be playing as well. They want this to become a destination for people, whether it's football fans, people who just want to see a project unlike any other. They really want it to be something bigger than football.
Wall Street Journal reporter Andrew Beaton on Los Angeles Stadium at Hollywood Park being built by the owner of the LA Rams. That story later in the hour. For the last several years, teachers and principals around the country have seen the rates of e-cigarette use soar among their students. They've caught kids vaping in school bathrooms, in their cars, and in their classrooms. They've tried practically everything to get them to stop. Now, the news of more than 1,000 confirmed and probable causes of illnesses tied to vaping, better than 24 deaths, is giving the efforts of school officials a new urgency. For many, the public health crisis caused by vaping is becoming the ultimate teachable moment. Andrea Peterson, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, paid a visit to Buffalo High School outside of Minneapolis, where the message just might be sinking in. Andrea, what did you find?
Buffalo High School is really kind of a typical high school in a middle-class kind of small town. So it really, you know, is facing the same issues with teen use of e-cigarettes that schools are across the country. And what they've been seeing is this steady, actually soaring number of kids vaping. And they have pretty much been relatively powerless to stop it. No matter, you know, they've done things, you know, they suspend kids for using e-cigarettes. They've torn the outside doors off bathrooms so kids can't, you know, stealthily vape inside. They've had countless sort of, you know, school assemblies to talk about the risks of addiction to nicotine, perhaps leading to other kinds of addictions. You know, teens actually get addicted to nicotine much more easily than adults do. And so, you know, and it can set them up for sort of lifelong issues. So they've been kind of, you know, screaming into the wind, and really it wasn't until this kind of public health crisis where you're having, you know, over 1,000 people, probable and confirmed cases, according to the CDC, of these, you know, serious lung illnesses and 19 deaths related, what looks like primarily to vaping THC cartridges, many of which are, that are bought kind of in the black market. But this is sort of looked at as a kind of a teachable moment. They're kind of seizing this opportunity when all this kind of scary news is around to, you know, kids are finally willing to listen, actually, about the health risks of e-cigarettes. Like, they're actually, you know, the news of these deaths is starting to scare them, and it's providing an opening for schools to finally, you know, to deliver this, their sort of anti-vaping message that they've been delivering for the last couple of years, but actually find a more receptive audience now.
Wow. So the comments you receive from a lot of these teenagers, you get the sense that there was real sincerity here behind, hey, you know, listen, bottom line, taking chemicals into your lungs is not a good idea.
Right. I mean, what was interesting is that it's not monolithic. I mean, the students are sort of, you know, there's a kind of wide range of answers. I mean, I did encounter some students that had not heard about these recent illnesses. Most had, you know, they'd heard various things about them. There was a lot of sort of rumors and kind of misinformation around there. But, you know, they did seem to be, actually the alcohol and drug counselor at Buffalo High School said that kids seem to be much more receptive when she's talking to them. She's talked to them about sort of the health risks of e-cigarettes, you know, for years now, but usually it kind of fell on deaf ears.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found really interesting talking to students and teachers was that they really also tried to uncover what it was that was driving kids to vape. And they were surprised by what they found. It wasn't what you would necessarily think, which was that they were just trying to, you know, fit in or look cool, or, you know, that it was peer pressure. But actually they wanted to connect with other kids, that it was one of the few opportunities they had, you know, to sort of kind of sit around and talk with their friends. Mm-hmm. And it was a way of sort of connecting. I kind of think of it as, you know, the smokers standing outside the bar,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
chit-chatting. And so the school is actually trying to come up with other ways for kids to connect, but in a healthier way.
We're speaking with Andrea Peterson, health reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called "Teens Ignored Vaping Warnings for Years. Now Some Are Scared." I wonder, too, about this public health crisis and the fact that the CDC kind of releases this weekly report and the numbers keep,
yes,
soaring.
Yeah.
I mean, is that actually helping?
I mean, you know, like I said, I think it's providing this sort of opportunity for them that kids are actually, you know, they'd kind of brushed off the risks of you know, becoming addicted to nicotine and, you know, things like that. And this is actually making them sort of wake, sit up and say, hey, maybe, you know, sucking the stuff into my lungs isn't the greatest idea. It looks like the risks are primarily related. I think more than 3/4 of the people who have gotten these serious lung illnesses have been vaping THC.
Thanks, Andrea. Andrea Peterson, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. I'm now more efficient with my time thanks to Zapier, which automatically transcribes my data-filled emails into a spreadsheet or CRM. Zapier is the easiest way to automate your work. They support more than 1,500 business applications, which allows Zapier to connect all of your business software and will free you to focus on what matters most. See for yourself and go to my special link, zapier.com/Gordon. Connect the apps you use most and let Zapier take it from there. Zapier lets you instantly engage with leads, send them to a CRM or spreadsheet that notifies your team fast. You can build the exact solution you need in minutes without writing code or asking a developer for help. Join the over 4.5 million people that use Zapier to save an average of 40 hours per month. Right now, through November, try Zapier for free by going to our special link, zapier.com/Gordon. That's zapier.com/Gordon for your free 14-day trial. zapier.com/Gordon. Glad you could spend some time with us. Once the mecca of American retail, shopping malls across the country are closing at an alarming rate, as you've probably seen. Real estate analysts and business trend observers point to a multitude of factors changing the way that we shop. It's a story by Dan Boylan at the Washington Times. Dan, what is this trend of Amazoning, as you call
it? Amazoning, Gordon, is you know, this phenomenon that's happening across the country, of a number of factors driving it, of mall, traditional mall retailers, big super malls, they're closing at a pretty furious rate across the country. And the factors for this are multiple. One is online retailing has really broken into, you know, their old business model. People just don't go to these malls like they used to. People are much more interested in shopping online. Younger buyers, millennials and Gen Zs, they also have different buying habits. In addition to the fact that a lot of these, the actual malls were really overbuilt, the amount of retail space, there was just way too much built in the last 20 years.
Yeah. We see these stories every now and then about how some of these smaller retailers, like maybe a gym, will take up some of that space at maybe an anchor store in a strip mall, for example. But is there just not enough of that happening to keep these things going?
Well, I think that's where it's interesting. You know, you what you mentioned there is these big anchor stores, and we've seen this from Sears and Roebuck to Borders. All these places have filed for bankruptcy here. A lot of it's really post-Great Recession. There are spaces across the country where there was one down in Nashville that I looked into, and it was a mall that had been refitted as a community college, library, and actually part of an ice hockey rink for one of the Nashville hockey teams down there. There was also actually, Google has actually used a beat-up old iconic, what was an iconic mall that had run into become a beat-up space out in Silicon Valley. So there are places that are doing this. The International Council of Shopping Centers, which is really one of the main industry voices, says that a lot of the space that's being lost is actually being taken up by these lifestyle center, non-retail, more like dining establishments, some of these other things, some of these other non-retail tenants. But these places are filling in the gaps.
Yeah.
But hard to say.
We're speaking with Dan Boylan, national correspondent at The Washington Times. His piece is called Amazoning of America Leaves Malls as Crumbling Monuments to the Past. You took a little walk down memory lane, too, with the kind of the inventor of the mall and how he envisioned them and how he built them and then how he became disappointed in what they were. Explain that.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. Victor Gruen is his name. He was an immigrant from an Austrian Jew from Vienna who came to the U.S. Without too much money, and he got into architectural design. And he had these ideas about how to take some of those old Viennese-type, you know, interesting public spaces and put them completely indoors. You know, America after World War II, we were experiencing this burst of consumer activity fueled with people moving out to these new suburbs with cars. And Victor Gruen thought, well, can we make a place that is climate controlled? Can we make one that's climate controlled? And he actually designed the country's very first mall was in a place called Edina, Minnesota. It opened in 1956, and it had indoor fountains, an aviary for birds, and also art installations. However, historians, I looked into this, Gordon, and historians say that Gruen really actually grew to despise what these malls quickly became, which were these really megastructures that mushroomed across the country, particularly away from downtowns, traditional downtowns.
Okay, yeah.
And he said, God, that's really drained a lot of vibrancy from a lot of cities, small cities and small towns in the United States. That's not what I intended at all.
So to his point, when he built that first one in Edina, I thought it's interesting you referenced the indoor fountains and the aviary element to that. I get the feeling at times that that's what might keep malls alive, and that's the experience of going to one, right, for socialization or something.
That's really right, and it's really ironic that these malls became these cookie cutter, really simple two rows of shops facing each other, anchored with a big giant store at the end. I looked at photos of his original designs, and they had rugs in them, and some of them almost looked like hotel lobbies.
Oh,
really,
wow.
cool spaces together.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Boylan at the Washington Times. 21 minutes now after the hour. On this weekend, I'm glad you're with us. Qualcomm has spent nearly $50 billion advancing its wireless initiatives. If you're in the U.S., you'll likely have access to all three technologies, and where one leaves off and another picks up is not important. What will these mean to us in our everyday lives? Here's tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. Rob, start with what the technologies are.
Well, the three technologies that we've got are 5G, Wi-Fi 6, and millimeter wave. And what all three of them do, 5G is your WAN, your outdoor network, Wi-Fi 6 is your indoor network, and millimeter wave, which is kind of interesting, is it kind of bounces line of sight between the two, filling gaps inside and providing a way to broadcast data to cell sites. Line of sight. So with the three of them in place, you get this ubiquitous wire-capable or wire-like networking capability. So it's like you've got everything plugged into a physical network, and so it opens up the possibility of, you know, receiving stuff that's already pre-configured. You bring it into your home, and it automatically works. It creates the possibility of everything from stoplights. Well, anything pretty much is electronic that becomes connected. Your cars, stoplights, your doors, your lights, your appliances, everything is able to call home, and then the result is it can all get updated, it can all talk to each other, and then it can all flow together to provide an experience whereby when you go into an area that's surrounded by this stuff, everything automatically adjusts for you, something that Bill Gates has been able to do for decades. It's finally coming to the rest of us.
So you paint this picture of looking at 2025 and the artificial intelligence system you could conceivably have in your home. Explain all the things that could happen for you or perhaps to you.
From the moment you get up in the morning to the moment you go to bed at night, the ecosystem is adjusting for you. So, for instance, you get out of bed, and then the lights in your house just lighting where you need to go. Come on, guiding you through the morning ritual. Your toothbrush adjusts for you. The shower fires up, sets for the temperature that you want, and the news is showing on your digital assistant, the little TV screen in your bathroom, which is what I've got right now, and it's showing. Showing you whatever news is relevant to you during your morning, and then you head off. Your car's already charged. It's got your direction to go. It's routed you through traffic. Stoplights are automatically timed and adjusting for the commute, so your commute is easier and simpler. And the music you're listening to at home or the news or whatever you're listening to follows you around as well. It goes from your bathroom to your kitchen to your car. And then so you head up to work, your cubicle automatically configures for you, and your stuff will be waiting for you to use in that cubicle, and all of that will happen automatically. Typically, a robot would place your stuff in the cubicle pending your arrival. With the temperature, lighting, and everything else adjusted for you as you go through the day. And then as you go out to lunch, it's anticipated where you're going to go to lunch. Your favorite order is already ready and waiting for you. You have lunch, go back to work, and then your day goes on until you get home. Your house anticipates you, self-warms, security system disables itself, and then as you walk in, whatever you're listening to is continued on to your house. And if it has a video component, perhaps the TV pops up and shows you the video aspect of the news that you were listening to, or a music video that was connected to the song that you wanted. All of this happening automatically, all of it happening throughout the day. And if you have any problems, you get an instant and automatic 911 calls. Medical alerts are sent out.
We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. At what point does your mind explode from overstimulation?
You could drive yourself nuts by surrounding yourself with media, much like we have done with smartphones, where people pick up smartphones and they can't put them down and end up walking into traffic or falling into holes or on any one of a number of things that happens when you're distracted. But in this particular case, at least the technology is looking out for you and would alert you to the hole, would alert you to the traffic, and certainly would alert drivers that are driving that you're about to step out into traffic, because those very same wireless devices can actually track you throughout the day and make sure that you don't do something stupid.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. 30 minutes now after the hour. This Morning with Gordon Deal podcast is brought to you by Privacy.com. For me, shopping online with Privacy.com is safer. How? By using Privacy.com's virtual credit or debit cards. They protect my identity and bank info when shopping online. Remember the recent theft of financial data of millions of online shoppers from a very large online retailer? Privacy.com's virtual accounts are held to the same security standards as your bank. It's PCI DSS compliant, which makes info online secure with military-grade encryption. Privacy.com can also help you take control of your finances by setting spending limits for when you tend to order too much takeout, or by monitoring recurring payments or subscriptions. Head to privacy.com/Gordon to sign up and start shopping. As a special treat for our listeners, new customers will automatically get $5 to spend on your first purchase. Yep, that's free money to use on any online purchase. Go to privacy.com/Gordon and sign up now. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Coming up this half hour, financial risks we rarely acknowledge. Also, the NFL's $5 billion bet to make football work in L.A. And Supreme Court justices caught passing notes to each other. Hear what they write in about 20 minutes. If you're concerned about being tracked by Facebook and Google when you're out and about, and by stores when you enter their retail environment, get used to it. Because at work, your employer is probably doing it now and will be even more active very soon. Why they do it, and the newest ways they conduct this spying. From Jefferson Graham, personal tech writer at USA Today. Jeff, the spying creep continues.
It does. The number that will shock your listeners is that Gartner, which is a major analyst firm, business consultancy, predicts that by next year, 80% of all employees will be tracked in some way or the other.
Goodness. All right, so as you reference, it could be on multiple devices, phone computer, work computer?
Everything. So let's start with the obvious, which is that if you have a company-issued phone or computer, you're being tracked, period. If you're on their network, you're being tracked. That's just the way it is. If you have your own phone and you use it at work, odds are they can't get into it. They probably can, but it's not as obvious as if they give you their equipment and you're on their network.
Mm. All right, so this is, what are we, roughly 25 years since the introduction of email when spying perhaps began? I mean, what do they want at this point?
Well, on the positive note, they want, you know, all those awful surveys that we keep on getting, seeing how are we doing? It's another variant on the surveys, and they want to track sentiment of the employees and make sure they're happy and check trends. That's one end. The other one, one of the extreme ones, was that putting a device under the tables in the conference rooms to measure body temperature. That's to figure out if people actually ever go in those rooms to use them.
We're speaking with Jeff Graham, personal technology columnist at USA Today. He also hosts a podcast called Talking Tech. He's written a piece entitled "Don't Look Now, But Your Boss Is Probably Spying on Your Phone, Computer, and Now at Work." All right, so obviously the elephant in the room is privacy here. What rights might you have if, in fact, you're using the company's devices and network?
Very little. If people start screaming loud enough, maybe they'll get somewhere, but, you know, I don't see it happening. Maybe if there's a revolt at work and 100 people say, no, this is not acceptable, that maybe the company will listen to them. I'm a little skeptical on that. But let's do this. If you do have a company-issued phone, an iPhone particularly, go to your general settings, and you'll see right there it says at the top of the screen that the company has taken control of your phone. And then there's a button you can press in there, which I put in the article. I referenced the point. I'll pull it up. But you can find out what they're tracking of you.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And that's settings, general profiles, and device management, and that's where you can find that out. And the other thing just to remember is that when you type something into an inner office communication program, whether that's Slack or Microsoft Teams or whatever, and you think bad-mouthing someone in a one-to-one conversation cannot be tracked, you're fooling yourself. Mm. But everything, every word, every digit you type can be tracked. So I would just be a little careful with some of the things that you say. Yes, they monitor your social media as well, but that's more of a thing where if there's a flag, they'll take a look at it. Okay, know that you're mouthing off about politics every night, and it says in your social media profile that you work at such and such a company, that could be a problem.
Thanks, Jeff. Jefferson Graham, personal technology writer at USA Today. It is 21 minutes now in front of the hour. On this weekend. Thanks for being with us. What's the biggest financial risks that we face, or what are the biggest risks? Today, many of us would point to the possibility of a recession, the stock market plunge, perhaps both. Indeed, those are perennial perils, but perhaps they shouldn't be our biggest worries. Personal finance expert Jonathan Clements has a list of at least 4 dozen other items that will cause us to lose sleep. He's here with a handful of them. Jonathan, explain.
So you're absolutely right, Gordon. I mean, we get really wound up, especially by the stock market. Every day, we're focused on, is the Dow up? Is the Dow down? And if it's a bad day in the market, we have this sense of panic. And yet, in all likelihood, the market will be back up tomorrow. So we shouldn't be panicking. And the spreading over the market tends to distract us from what I would argue are much bigger risks in our financial life, but because they don't unfold every day in real time, they aren't so much in our face, we tend to think less about them. So what I did with this piece was try to talk about some of the risks that we face outside of the financial market.
A lot of these things, you know, could be surprises when you're young. They could happen when you're old, you know, middle age, often without warning. Explain some of the ones that that stood out to you here.
Three major buckets jump out, and probably the biggest one is family. You know, in many ways, family is an asset, but it can also be an enormous liability. I mean, anybody who's got kids knows that if your kid gets into financial trouble, you're going to step up to the plate and help him or her. So what are the sort of dangers that you might face? Well, supposing you've got a kid who's in his or her 20s and they don't have health insurance and they get seriously ill. You know, who's going to end up footing that medical bill? In all likelihood, it's going to be you, the parents. Similarly, when you think about you sending your kid as a teenager alone onto the road in your car, think about what can pan out because of that. Look at the other end of the spectrum with your parents. They're retired. What if they run out of money? What if they get scammed out of their wealth?
Yeah.
These are big risks in our financial life, and yet we tend to think far less about them than we do about the financial markets.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements, personal finance expert, also founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com, and he's written a piece on the site called 50 Shades of Risk, and we're thinking about the biggest financial risks that we face besides, say, a recession or a plunge in the stock market. One of the ones you brought up, too, was number 9 on your list. Social Security benefits get slashed. I understand the basics of that, but politically speaking, how could that happen?
It's a great question. I mean, I hear from people all the time who believe that Social Security benefits will get reduced at some point in the future. You know, we do know that about 10 years from now, Social Security will only be able to fund about 75% of the current benefit level based on projected Social Security payroll taxes. So there is going to be a problem down the road, and the fear is that the politicians will simply cut benefits to make the numbers balance out. I honestly don't believe that's going to happen, but clearly, you know, there is political risk there, and there are other political risks that we face. There's the danger that Medicaid will get cut and Medicare will get cut. I mean, if Medicare gets cut, that'll be a huge problem for retirees. I also hear constantly from readers who are concerned that Congress is going to turn around and start taxing Roth accounts. You know, we're going to end up with these big budget deficits, particularly as the population continues to age, and we have this problem with Medicare, and we have this problem with Social Security, and they're worried that, you know, to make up the deficit, they're going to go after Roth accounts. Again, I don't think it's going to happen, but you never know. This is a wild world we live in.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, personal finance expert, also founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend.
Now that Human Resources VP Ashley Campbell has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, she's managing her workforce like a rock star. She even has her own hype song.
I'm the spark before the fire. I'm the power in the train. I
have a really diverse workforce with different hours, skill sets, and pay grades.
Don't stop, I'm the dream and you should know that.
Now we're motivating and engaging the right people every step of the way.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
How about some football news here? LA Rams owner Stan Kroenke is spending $5 billion for Los Angeles Stadium at Hollywood Park, the extravagant attempt to create a West Coast shrine for the NFL that's under construction there. It isn't just the most expensive in the U.S. and perhaps the world. It's costing more than double the next priciest NFL stadium and far more than the industry standard. More on the LA project from This Weekend's Jim Chesko.
Pro football in Los Angeles has always been a tough sell. Maybe a fancy new stadium will change that. Here to talk with me about that issue, the Wall Street Journal's Andrew Beaton. Well, over the last 3 years since the team's moved there, how are they doing with fans and the population in general in Los Angeles?
If you look at the Rams, they've obviously been a really exciting team in recent years. You know, their first season there was quite the disappointment, but since then they've hired Sean McVay. They've been one of the best teams in the game. They reached the Super Bowl last year, and they've brought a lot of energy. The Chargers were also quite good last year, but they play in this small stadium that's designed for soccer. And if you've been there, the feeling around that stadium is that you go there and it barely feels like a Chargers home game. If they're playing the Chiefs, it feels like it's more Chiefs fans. Sometimes you see empty seats there. So I think one of the things that people around the game have said is for you to really evaluate football's return for Los Angeles, nobody really wants to go to a temporary home, even though people have. A lot of people have gone. It's really difficult to judge until these teams have their real home in Englewood, which is what this new stadium is all about.
Yeah, a new state-of-the-art stadium under construction, the Los Angeles Stadium at Hollywood Park, and it's apparently going to be pretty extravagant. I guess with a $5 billion price tag, it better be something of a shrine, right?
Yeah, and so the goal is to sort of make this a real destination for whether it's football fans, whether it's for fans of the Rams or the Chargers, and that's really why Rams owner Stan Kroenke is footing this enormous bill in terms of, you know, it's really expensive to build a sports stadium these days. All the amenities that fans expect, you want to have comfy seats, you want to have Wi-Fi, you want to have big concourses, you want to have all these sorts of things that makes building a stadium expensive. But the $5 billion price tag on this facility just blows other stadiums out of the water. And they sort of have this much bigger vision here of saying this isn't just a home for the Los Angeles Rams. This isn't just where the Chargers are going to be playing as well. They want this to become a destination for people, whether it's football fans, whether it's for people who just want to see a project unlike any other. They really want it to be something bigger than football.
And it's more than just the 70,000-seat stadium, is it not? There's some other things going on there?
Exactly. The main complex itself is actually three facilities. There's the 70,000-person stadium, which actually can expand to more than 100,000 people for big events that they're going to have, like the Super Bowl, the College Football Championship, the Olympics. But even beyond that stadium itself, there's this plaza. And then on the other side of the plaza, there's a 6,000-person performance art venue where you can expect to see concerts and things of that nature. But if you look more broadly around the entire property, first of all, this is nearly 300 acres. It is a sprawling piece of property. And so obviously a football stadium only takes a small portion of that.
Right. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Andrew Beaton with this weekend's Jim Chesko. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Glad you're with us. Seated behind the bench for oral arguments, the justices of the Supreme Court train their robust intellects on America's most vexing legal questions, unless, as the Wall Street Journal says, they're passing notes like bored teenagers. Justice Antonin Scalia once wrote to Justice Harry Blackmun during the final argument of the 1990 and 91 term. The note read, quote, "Harry, stay awake." They were listening to a case about whether the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act allowed town supervisors to restrict aerial spraying. The journal says that entry is part of some 15,000 handwritten documents that a political science professor at the University of Minnesota has copied over two decades from archives of former justices. During a December 1974 argument, Justice William O. Douglas proved himself a judge of fashion as well as law. He wrote, "We should not give this guy many points in his argument, but as far as his jacket is concerned, he comes out way above average." The professor, by the way, is building an archive called SCOTUS Notes. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. I'm Gordon Deal.
I've been around a long time, seeing a lot of gadgets show up that are supposed to make my job easier. Digital screwdrivers, hammer 2.0, the new improved nail, now with more pointiness. You know what really makes my job easier? Grainger. Easy reordering, easy inventory solutions, and easy to do business with every time. Gadgets come and go. You want reliability. You want Grainger. Call, click Grainger.com, or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.